Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 194 with the title Love in Motion. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Denise Caesar. Denise is a published author, a keynote speaker, and social emotional learning specialist who champions disability rights, mental health, and body positivity. She brings her lived experience of spasmodic dysphonia and inclusive fashion to T-Suit, actually. We got that wrong in the green room as well. T-Suit, there's no E on the end, to inspire change. And when I asked Denise to describe her superpower, she said that it is turning compassion into practical, inclusive actions across classrooms, communities, and fashion. Hello, Denise. Welcome to the show.
I am so happy to be here on Inclusion Bites, and I am so happy to be in this moment with you today.
Isn't that funny how in the green room, I was reading through those show notes, and I said T-Suite, and you said, oh, well, the second person to say T-Suite is actually T-Suit, and I did the same mistake when I was reading it out. It's something how my brain just couldn't process that, could it?
Because I'm so sweet.
So sweet. You are. Yes, you are. To a T. Sweet to a T. And also your name, because it's Caesar, but you were saying in the green room that it's Italian roots. So it was probably historically Cesare.
Exactly. Cesare is the pronunciation Italian.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was musing whether it was actually Julius Caesar. It was actually Julius Cesare. And probably Julius isn't even pronounced correctly. So hail Cesare.
Right. Yes. Hail Cesare. Yeah, exactly. But Caesar, you know, even on a menu in a restaurant, if you say
Cesare salad.
It's right. Yeah. It is. But people say Caesar, right? Because that's what the brain knows and the American version of it. But if it's a real Italian restaurant, they'll spell it the way my name is spelled. But it's, yeah.
So your name is spelled Cesare. So that's the Italian spelling.
Exactly.
So how did you get the name?
So, you get married, right? You take a name. And my husband, his identity, right? That's his name. His father, you know, I gather, you know, you come to America from Italy and then they Americanize it. So it's Caesar. So when I met him as being a speech pathologist, I'm like, oh, no, Cesare. But, you know, you have to keep, he grew up like that. That's what people call him. And I have a son. I can't change the name. It's like a brand, no. Right? You can't change it. You can't do that.
It's a very old Italian name, isn't it? So, be proud of it, I guess.
And Caesar, hail Caesar. Maybe he changed it, right? He changed
it.
Maybe. We don't know.
He may have gone to America for his holidays, and while he was there, he changed his name and came back and plundered Europe.
Exactly. We don't know, but maybe we should investigate that. Well, I don't know. But we have something to search about.
Yeah. 1,000 years before Columbus, we had Julius Caesar popped over. Mm-hmm. Made a few pizzas, left some salad.
But now I'm getting hungry. Like, oh yeah, okay. Now we have to go meet for a meal. Exciting.
So your accent sounds like New York, but you're not living in New York anymore.
That's true. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I moved to Staten Island, New York after that when I got married and had my son. And now, 4 months ago, I moved to Lufton Hilton Head, Staten Island. That was a blunder. I moved to Bluffton Hilton Head, South Carolina.
South Carolina. I went to Staten Island once. I was in New York with my wife, and someone said to us the Staten Island ferry was free. So I thought, we've paid all that money to go to the Statue of Liberty and other things. Let's just go to Staten Island and see what it's all about. So we got the Staten Island ferry, got to the other end, got off, got back on it again, came home. So we had a bit of a free ride across the whatever that bit of water is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the time, I had a really bad cough. And it was about the time of SARS, I think it was, in probably the late 90s, I think it was.
Yes.
And every time I coughed, everybody around me moved out the way. They were all paranoid. I mean, it's like,
yeah. And you were outside on the ferry, really. It was probably okay, you know, more of the air was, you weren't like in it, but it is tight. The ferry does get crowded. But we have a lot in common, right? Who knew you rode the ferry, right? I didn't know that it said Staten Island, New York, but now I live in Seattle. So 4 months ago, I moved to a place that's coastal, and even Staten Island is an island. So obviously, I do love water. So that's a segue that I love water. We'll get to that segue, right?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, let's not hang on the preamble anymore. So you've had a very busy life. You've written a book, Moments in Motion. Well, I think what it says here, I got in my notes, your journey spends losing and reclaiming your voice. Is that metaphorically or actually?
That's actually
losing your voice. Okay. You've launched an inclusive swimwear brand. Mm-hmm. So how did this all come about? What wove this together?
So it's interesting. Okay. I'm a speech language pathologist who lost her voice. So this is like a full circle moment. We will start to the losing of the voice. Being a speech pathologist, 2006, I was in a car accident and it triggered something for a condition called spasmodic dysphonia. I still don't have a voice. I have to get injections to speak and my voice needs to be heard. So I make the choice to have the injections. I am fortunate and they do work. So that's how that journey of the losing of the voice. So for 5 years, I had no voice. I didn't do Botox right away. So I had no voice. And in that, I'm going to say it was a dark time because we have to talk about darkness because you can't see light without darkness. In that dark period, I created T-shirt for everybody to a T. Because of being silent, not being able to really speak, I went into a different creative force in my brain. I didn't realize it at the time. You know, looking back, I know why. So I love water. We just talked about bringing us back to the water. We used to go to a swim club. I took my son at that time. He was 6 years old. He's now 25. I would go to this swim club, but I was always hiding myself, you know, putting a T-shirt on over the swimsuit, but then going into the water and it getting all wet and looking, not feeling good. It's just this heavy T-shirt hanging on your body and not being able to speak, but a lot of thoughts. I said, I have to do something. So then I used to wear something different and I didn't realize at the time that was my prototype. I would put something on that would kind of make me look smooth and that put something on top of it. And people would go, oh, where'd you get that? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I just put it together. And then from there, I didn't create it first. I came up with the name first. Fits everybody to a T-suit, because you're not a size, you're a fit. We are not sizes. We are humans. There's not a size. So that was born in my brain. It just came to me. But, you know, making this makeshift thing to make myself feel better, not covering up, but putting something on that made me look good and feel good inside. And then, okay, so, you know, you go through a journey of having, okay, so now I have this idea. What do I do? You know, I have this idea. It's running around in my brain, but understand one part of me was going through a very heavy time at work, in the world, trying to get along, recognizing and coming to terms that I have a disability, all of these things. But then this creative spin over here probably was lighting me up. So I kind of was balancing something. And then I came up with the name and I trademarked the name. Now this, you know, 2007, 8, 9, those 5 years to 2011 without a voice. But T-suit fits everybody to a T was not born. It wasn't really born until 2017. So it doesn't mean that you know, I was going, I was thinking, I was planning, but I listened to my intuition. That's another thing we'll talk about. I listened to my intuition that it was something. So 2017, born, hello, tea soup, fits everybody to a T. I create swimmable cover up. And it's not a cover up. I want to change that. I created a swimmable cover and a Pareto and different products to go with travel. So people, instead of putting on that wet t-shirt, they put on the t-top. I call it the t-top and the t-dress is the little black dress of swim where you go into the water and you feel sexy. You're allowed to feel good and you could go in and not hide. So that was my first feeling good about something that I created. And then I did got my voice back to Botox injections in 2011. So then I started to become more empowered because then I was able to, you know, when you lose your voice, it's detrimental. You know, I'm a talker and it really was something that was a loss. But then I'm going to take you to the 360 moment of my book. And I have written multiple books, but this book is a catalyst. Moments in Motion with Love was the tagline on T-Suit. I used to write that and put it on cards to customers, Moments in Motion with Love, Denise, because I felt like the motion in the water and your body and loving yourself. So that was my tagline for T-Suit. Who would have thought that? And then, hence COVID, 2020, being a speech language pathologist and having the disability, being with students and I having a disability, we were all put on lockdown and we had to work remotely with speech and language students. I was with them like we are right now. I mean, COVID brought about a lot of great things. You know, it was heavy. A lot of heaviness happened and sadness and sickness, but there were really great things that came out of it. And that's what I want to talk about. So I was online with my students and they were getting so disconnected. So lockdown, March, April, May. By May, I saw the disconnect in their eyes and I saw a lot of sadness. So that night I went to sleep and I actually prayed, please help me help these students because I really don't know what to do. I feel so disconnected from them myself and they're getting lost and we need to help them. At 5 o'clock in the morning, I woke up with a book. The book came out of me in my sleep. Some people might not believe me, but I have the proof because I woke up my husband. I said, wake up. I wrote a book. He goes, what are you doing now? You know, because I have him on this spiral of all these creative things. If you're not creative and someone's waking you up, nothing's not creative. You know what I'm saying? A creative brain just keeps going and going. I said, you have to listen. So I read it to him and I wasn't able to write it. I kind of spoke it. Luckily, we have these phones now. I spoke it into my phone and I read it to him and he goes, wait, read that again. And I read it again and he goes, oh, that's something. He just kept listening to it. I said, well, I have to do something. I was in the process of creating a prescriptive narrative for more. I thought in my mind, this is what I thought for adults, that I was going to do that because of all the trauma and sadness and mental health issues that I went through. And I said, no, this is what has to happen right now. So the publisher, I called her. I said, you have to listen to this. This was like 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm bothering her. I said, we can't do the other book. This has to happen right now. And sure enough, she called me. The both of us, she's like, yes, wasn't that? I don't even have to blink. Yes. But the real capture that captured me and the essence of why the book was so prevalent, my son was in college and they were all locked down too. And when I FaceTimed him and said, oh, can you listen to this? This just came through me. And I read it and he cried. Not from sadness. It released something. And it was like, yes, I only have this moment with love and I have to hold on to it. And it was something. And I'm going to cry now talking about it because it always brings me back there. Because it was this full, unbelievable moment. So, yeah. So that's how it came to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got so many questions to ask out of that. I mean, I suppose the thing is this spasmodic dysphonia. I mean, that I've never heard of that before. But is it a physical or is it a psychological or is it a bit of both?
So that's funny, but you know that there's so many people that have it. Some people don't know it. It's a neurological condition. My journey, I really had diagnosed myself because I went to doctors. They're going, like you just said, is it psychological? Is it? No, I knew I wasn't phonating. It was physiological because your vocal folds spasm. And that's why getting the injections of Botox paralyzes them so that we speak on respiration. So when I would speak, when I didn't have it, I would get choked and the voice could not come out. So, you know, I went through a lot of trauma trying to actually be diagnosed because, oh, asthma. Yes, I have asthma. That this is not asthma. Oh, acid reflux. Okay, you want to tell me? Oh, no, it's not that. And this whole journey trying to figure it out. But I'm going to tell you something else. Now that I did go to a doctor, and that's why I didn't do Botox for 5 years, because you have to trust your instincts. And he was such a downer. He wasn't uplifting, saying, you know, you got to keep moving. You got to keep yourself motivated and you got to keep working. No, he told me, oh, don't work, go on disability. And I looked at him. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, you have a disability. I'm like, but I said no. But imagine doing that injection with someone who was so not proactive for me to be in the world. I shouldn't have to give up because I had a disability. So that's tip number one to the audience. Your gut, your instincts tell you something. Listen to them. So I didn't do the Botox, and it was hard to not talk for 5 years.
I can guess that of you. Yes, yeah. I can guess that. You are a talker.
Yes.
So this is completely different to selective mutism, where young people through anxiety or
exactly. Yes, it's a totally. So yes, I work with children who had selective mutism. It's a totally different. It's more of a behavioral, psychological thing. This is an actual physiological, neurological condition. And even, you know, I don't know if you know, RFK Jr. has this. The senator, he has it. And if you listen to him, that's what he has. He does not do both.
That's why his voice is...
Yes, that's the condition.
Sounds a bit strange.
Yes.
Right.
That is the condition he has, and he does not do the Botox. It doesn't work for anyone, everyone either. So that's another side of it that, you know, I had the right doctor. I had the right knowledge because being a speech pathologist, I was a patient and the professional. So I kind of had... I had more of an advantage for myself than others do because this happens to people all the time and they don't even know what's wrong with them. So I feel blessed by that I was able to understand more.
So when RFK speaks and you say he's not on the Botox, you can just about understand him. So were you able to speak in some way? It was just almost like shouting through a straw sort of thing.
So if you listen to his voice, my voice was worse than that.
Right.
Yeah, my voice was more choked. He can kind of, he works on the phonation, I believe, because he can get the words out. It's labored, it's laborious, but it's also, he has to take his time. But yeah, so, but for me, right now I'm in the middle of my Botox injection. As I laugh, you want to laugh, I say the many voices of Denise, because when I start at the beginning of the Botox, I have this high-pitched voice, then I go in the middle like now, and then it starts to get a little raspy, and then it kind of slowly goes away. And then but it never goes away where you can't hear me anymore. When this happened to me, it was devastating. You couldn't understand because I had to really, I was choking to talk almost. You could think about that. So if you think I had a terrible, unintelligible at times voice. So I had to fight to keep my job too during that time because, you know, people don't advocate when you have a disability. They want to get rid, they want to hide you, they want to put you somewhere else. Well, they picked the wrong person to try to put in somewhere else.
So I guess now when the Botox is wearing off, you're in a better place mentally to cope with it. You've probably adapted yourself so that you know what it is. You're no longer kind of held back by it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, because, my voice, it comes and goes and you take me as I am. Like, I do podcasts all the time. There's the beginning of my Botox, the end. I'm in the middle for you. Yeah.
So sometimes, it sounds like you've been smoking stogies for the whole of last night, does it?
I never did, but I guess if that's true, maybe. If that's how you sound. Well, what I'm trying to say is, I come as I am because that's how you empower people. I'm not shying away from when it changes because it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, my voice is relatively deep. People, it confuses people. But I am what I am. And why should I why should I worry about my voice for you? And it is what it
is. That's right. You are who you are. And we should not change for anyone.
And be proud of that. Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good.
Yeah, because no one's you, no one's me. We are unique.
Whew. Glad of that. You're glad of that.
Yeah.
So I looked at your T-suit website and, so the three products, the top, the dress, and the Pareto, is it?
Pareto.
Why did we as a society invent bikinis and skimpy things? You know, Australians, they wear shirts to cover up because of the, what do you call it?
The light. Yeah.
Yeah, the UV light and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, or protecting yourself from the UV rays, right?
Yeah. But also to protect yourself from the gaze of people who are...
Yeah, but what I want to say about that, okay. If I want to wear a bikini, great. But they create... Okay, so the fashion industry created these things for models. Beautiful models. And there's nothing wrong with models. But the average human person is not a model. But we are looking at the model, right? And the model
got our little belly aprons going on, and our little tummy poking out, and the flabby bits under our boobs is there.
So, my suggestion to the fashion industry and what I created way back when, because you know, I wasn't that I'm downing it. I was an educator. I wasn't in the fashion world. I wasn't part of that world, but I became part of that world and got very educated. Even faster than I thought. And I'm proud of myself for creating things that no one else really thinks about. And what I did in the beginning, because you don't know, I did put swimwear on there, but I carefully selected swimwear. I took it off now because I'm revamping everything, but I carefully selected certain swimwear companies that cater to how it fits a woman. Because I could fit anybody. Everybody. I can fit anybody and I can fit everybody. But what I create, my creations are something special just to enhance the skin you're in. Like, so if you don't really feel comfortable even in a swimsuit, because a lot of people do not, if you put on the T-top or the T-dress, you could go in the water. Like I said, it's the little black dress of swim. It's an enhancement for you to walk around and be in the water and walk out of the water. The Pareo is a little bit different. You can wear that in the water, but it's more of like you could go from pool to restaurant and make it like all different stylings.
It's a wraparound skirt, effectively,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, the wraparound skirt. But of course, I have one color and the other two are black because, you know, as a small business, when you're starting out, you just have so much fun, right? How much, if it doesn't, not taking off, if people don't know about you, how are you doing? So you start small and you have to build from that. You have to build your audience. And your customers.
I like the idea that it's both wet and dry. So you can go from the pool to the bar to wandering around.
Exactly.
And it dries pretty quick, I'm guessing.
Oh, it dries. So I'm going to tell
you. Yeah. Because, so you're not dripping water
not
everywhere.
Dripping.
It's kind of.
Like, you know, wet t-shirt, that never dries. It doesn't dry. But if you think about this, it's also... I was also with I have a product on there too, Clean, which is about a delicate, organic, eco-friendly wash to clean the products. I'm all about sustainability. Sometimes we buy things, people are very, they buy something for $5 and there's nothing against that, but then they're throwing it away. Where's it going? Where's all this garbage going if you're not giving it away, if you're throwing it away? So sustainability, my products are made with exclusive and very good or quality fabric for the sustainability of it. And that's why it does dry quick too. It dries so quick, super quick. It's dry.
Yeah. So I looked through the website and it was a fascinating product. For me, I've never been comfortable in two-piece. I'm always a one-piece person.
I understand. And I think you would love it because it is so, like I said, it fits everybody. It's not a body type product or it's not a body type design. It's an inclusive fashion sense that everybody looks perfect in it for who they are. That was my goal. Being able to, so having this on at the swim club when I thought about it, remember? Back then, before it even became something, I wanted to be able to jump up and walk around, not just, okay, oh my God, wait, I got to get the towel, I got to roll around. No, I wanted to be able to walk out of the water and just walk around. And now I can, with whatever swim that you have underneath, even if you wore a tank top and voyage, whatever you want to wear underneath, it just kind of gives it a step up.
Well, you could actually, you could probably turn a shorts and a tank top in something a bit more sexy as well, if you wanted to.
Exactly.
The dress.
Can I tell you a funny story? I don't know. So someone actually took it. Not that I would do this, and I'm not advocating, but feel free, anybody that feels free, because it is so forgiving. She went like nude underneath it and you couldn't see anything, because that's how the design kind of, it's not camouflage, but it's just magical.
It's a mesh. Yes, it's kind of a, yeah it's a black.
Yeah. I'm not going to say.
Not a tight mesh. It's a relaxed mesh, isn't it?
Exactly. So you can't.
You probably get your pinky through the hole, can you? Is that about
no,
it?
No, you can't even.
No? So it's smaller than the pinky.
Yeah, I wish I had. I don't have it here. But what is that saying? It's not camouflage. It's magical because you can't see through. Camouflage means you're hiding. This is not hiding. It's just magical.
So you could be ending up with people wearing it out in the evening, you know, going out in town. You could, as you say.
Exactly.
Put a bra and pair of knickers underneath and just go out clubbing.
That's it. Exactly. See, you get it. You just get it.
It doesn't have to just be for swimming. It could be the one outfit for your whole holiday.
Because you can, and you know what? If you interchange it, put different colors because of that mesh, you could change the color. You could see red through it or your.
I'm just thinking it's really powerful, bright scarlet red undies and bra underneath. And
amazing. And then it's a different, and then having the top and the dress, like the T-top could be with jeans or whatever, but then the dress could become a dress, put a shawl, you just go wild.
Got your red, you got your turquoise, you got your taupe and all these different colors.
Exactly, 1,000%.
That sounds brilliant. I mean, I'm back on the website since we hang up. It's got to give it a go.
It is, and it's amazing because like I said, the fashion industry doesn't cater to sizing. So that's how people get suppressed too with their body image, because their sizing is skewed. Let's say I'm size 12, right? So I go in the shop and I say, oh, this is my size. And I go in, no, that is size 8. It's 2 sizes down from what we are. So now I go in there, now I'm crying. Did I gain weight? Why doesn't this fit me? I don't understand, because you're not a size, you're a fit. So if you go back, this is what I wanted to help people too. Go take, even though they label it a 16, 2 sizes up, and put it on. And if you look awesome in it, you buy it. Don't care. Because you're not a size, you're a fit. It's the fit. You're not that size. That's very.
I know that. I go into the retail outlet and I look on the rack and I see my size and I put it on. I think, it doesn't fit. It's too tight. And then you have to go size up. And you feel like you're cheating going up a size or two. And it's like.
But I want you to get the number out of your head, everybody. Get the number out. Just when you put it on, so some things aren't fit for somebody's body, right? We all gravitate to something that looks better on us because it's the fit that makes you feel good about it. So just look for the fit. That's why I'm fits everybody.
Yes.
And love yourself. Love your body. I mean, we go through all stages. We gain weight, we lose weight, or we think we're too skinny. You're alive.
So you wrote this book, Moments of Motion with Love, and that was all around the mental health challenges that young people were having during COVID and that time there. Because it's hard to think, you know, COVID was 5 years ago. 5 years ago. What, it seems like yesterday. I don't know what happened.
It's like mind-blowing. It just it's always present, but it's so long ago because people are still getting it. You know, it's still present. You know, it's a lot of people are having, and I'm not deeming this, but like stress syndrome, post-traumatic stress syndrome, because we didn't really get the mental health that we needed for that phase of our life. There's not enough being done about that. People don't. And, you know, I talk about the children that were in kindergarten then. They didn't give them enough. They're falling through cracks of education because they just missed it all. So I could go on a whole topic about that. You know, we will be here forever. There's so many things I could tell you about that.
But even as an adult, it was, for me, it was a tough time. I mean, luckily, we didn't have children living with us. Our children were older than that, and they were kind of dealing with themselves. But I imagine when you're cooped up, locked down, not able to go shopping, not able to go out and do stuff and play outside, it's almost like one of those disaster movies, isn't it?
It was like like I said, they didn't have real interaction and they didn't have social pragmatic, like being able to deal with some things. They can't deal now. They don't have coping mechanisms. And that's where the mindfulness comes in with the book.
Hmm.
And there's sort of emotional component.
So what's the key learning for you that came out of that time then?
It's the key learning of COVID? Well, you know, I wrote the book about mindfulness and moments in motion with love. But being mindful is not something easy that we do. It's something you have to practice mindfulness. It's not just, oh, I'm mindful today. Oh, you have to, because our brains are always rolling and thinking, what's next? You have to really breathe. Say, I am taking a mindful moment and really know what presence is. Grounding on your feet on the ground. I don't know. I have so many things going on that you probably don't even know about. My book became a yoga motions with love because every page of the book has a motion. And I have a video that is post-production with movements to physically put you in the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking back at what was going on in my head at the time. And
Did I answer your question? I'm wondering, did I really answer it or I'm just going around a circle there?
I don't know. Let me ask you some more questions and see if we can zero back to it. But I mean, the thing, we all have this, went through similar phases, denial, all the sort of seven stages of grief maybe, because I lost effectively my business. I mean, and many others did. We had customers one day and then next day we didn't. Mm-hmm. I remember it all started, as far as I was concerned, where there was that ship, was it moored off of Los Angeles or something, was it? There was a big ocean liner and there was 15 people on it or something that had COVID and people were complaining about being locked in their cabin and that they were being passed their meals under the doors. It was like, well, this is really ridiculous. And suddenly Italy, we go back to Italy in Europe, they had people in intensive care and they were dying and we were thinking, Italians, the boat in America, whatever. Then suddenly it's all locked down, all locked down. It's like, and then people were dying from it. Incredible.
Yes. Well, I'm thinking about something that you just said because the college community, my son was in college, right? I talked about that. They have so much stuff that's still in them from that. We being locked down, my husband lost his business. You just jawed that to me. Not that we're forgetting, but sometimes it's very heavy what went on during that time. It's heavy that we kind of push it away, but it will come back. You can't push things away. So that's what I want to say about it. So much went on. Pushing it down is not going to heal you.
But it's almost like the business community and the politicians and people around the world have forgotten. It's like, we just got to move on. It didn't happen. Get back to the office, no working from home, all those well-being issues, all those great things we were doing for our staff, our employees, our customers to make them feel wanted. We kind of just thrown all that in the bin. I thought it would be a generational shift change. And it's just reset. Reset, isn't it?
Yeah.
We didn't learn anything.
No. Because we didn't do the work.
No. No, we would. Maybe it didn't last long enough. Maybe we need another year of it.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
But it still is present. People are still dying from it, right?
Yeah.
People lose sight of that, too. Maybe not in the massive amounts of deaths, but people still get it. People are still dying from it. It's still here. It's morphed. It's changing. But there's more. It's like you said, there's more to it. We did not do the work. Not on purpose. There was nothing. No one's offering anything. No one's actually, like we're right now stating it. There's so much work that needs to be done.
Well, it gave birth of more strength to the anti-vax movement. So we've seen more people weaponizing the anti-vax.
Right.
We mentioned RFK earlier. I mean,
well, I mentioned him, but he does not do the Botox because he's anti-vax, right? Okay. One side or the other, I have to do it. You have to pick and choose what's right for you. But vaccines saved the world, right? What people didn't die because of vaccines is a whole, yeah, exactly. It became a dividing line, not a...
politicized, weaponized.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, yeah, if you vote blue, you believe this. If you vote red, you believe that. And it's kind of becoming that battle cry, isn't it?
It's funny that we're talking about this because just last night, my friend came over for her birthday. We had a whole weekend together. We had this red and blue. I said, why is it that? Why are we not just coming together for the greater good? It's not about division. How about doing what you're supposed to do? We the people, we're not in charge. We the people should have the say. We should have more say in there. Realm of what they're presenting to us. We the people don't have a voice, really. I mean, I have a voice, but not in government. Just don't, because we're not in charge of that. So it's red, blue, green, it doesn't matter. It will still be divisive because they're not doing their part together. They're dividing it. So we can't go there. I'm too much about love. When I go there, I get all shoo. Because they don't. They need a little bit of love in their little situations that they're dealing with.
Yeah, I struggle as well because
it's a lot.
Me, it's so clear and obvious that compassion, love, empathy, communication,
it's so
listening.
It's so clear. But this was I can't even believe this. This was our exact conversation last night. It's so clear to us. But why are we so divided?
Why is our perspective not the only perspective? Is it power, money? It can't just be power and money, can it?
I think it's just, I don't have that. If I had that $1 million answer, if I had that.
Well, split it 50-50.
Split
yeah,
it, right, fire. Right, exactly. Yeah. We had that $1 million answer because it is something, you know, something so simple, but it's so complicated. Because we're not part of it.
So we're living in a world now, as you said, it's polarized. There's debates. The political climate seems to be out of touch sometimes with that compassionate rhetoric. We've got our young people, young adults, even older adults.
Yes,
we spend a lot of time flicking through our screens, being judged by likes and Instagram and Snapchat filters. It's really tough being a kid now, isn't it?
It sure is. They believe what they see. They have to dig deeper. You can't just believe all these. Because people could change things. On Instagram, you could have filters. You could just change anything. You could post different things you want to say. Not everything is true. Not everything is, you know, not false, but not everything is true. And it's too much of this instant world that people don't even take the moment or mindfulness to actually, they're just flipping. And like you're saying, the brain is just... Next, next, next. Well, what is that? You know, I am happy though. I am on Instagram, but I do not put things on there. I put knowledge. Knowledge is power. I put things that you could learn. I put things to empower you, you know, because I give you information, but you really, in the end of it, have to empower yourself.
Yeah, right? I mean, the way I look at things like Instagram or Facebook or other platforms, LinkedIn, is that if you meet me a real person, you recognize me. It's not like I'm, is that you? Is that really you?
Is that really
you? Look a bit different.
Right.
I very rarely wear makeup when I'm doing podcasts, maybe if I'm doing some keynotes online, maybe, but very rarely. And if I go out, I think, am I just going to the shops? Am I just doing a bit of this, bit of that? I think, I'm not going to bother. So I'm quite happy to be raw and ready, you know, kind of thing.
Well, I like that, raw and ready. That's a good one. I like that. But it's true. We just went back to this. Be you. We were talking about this right before the park. You just have to be you. And I did write, I am a co-author in another book with 33 powerful women called Magnificently Made.
Well, I love that as well.
Yeah,
amen.
Yeah.
I
the title is beautiful, but within it, my chapter is called Let It Be. And it's all about how music healed me. Because music
the
was...
The Beatles.
Yes, the Beatles and other songs and listening to... But also there's science to the music. It's not just art form. There's science, the vibrations, the brain and the vagus nerve, all these things that music does that people don't know. Or that they should investigate because it's amazing.
I love it when we name drop the vagus nerve into these conversations.
Yeah, you love that. Well, guess what? I studied the vagus nerve because I'm a speech language pathologist. So I could talk about the vagus nerve because I studied it.
Wow, it's such an underrated part of our neurobiological system, isn't it? I mean,
Those are the cranial nerves. They're in your brain. Your brain is the center, right? Your heart is a center. Your brain is a center. These things have to, that's the difference. This is the political difference. The brain and the heart are not coming together. That's the problem. That's the problem. The brain and the heart are not meeting.
Yeah, but the vagus nerve is the control highway, isn't it?
It's the epicenter. It goes from your brain to your gut. Yeah, it's the epicenter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's your adrenaline or your pituitary, all these glands.
Yeah.
Vagus nerve kicks in and says, you're going to feel anxious. You're going to feel queasy. Yeah.
People don't, like, I, of course, like I just said to you, I studied it. So I know where I brought myself back to college. That was some bad semester when I had to study all those cranial nerves. Oops. It was a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah. No, I've not studied it in any academic way, but I've certainly read up on it since I first came across the.
Yeah.
Came across it about 10 years ago, and it's like you start to understand why you feel something, how your biases trip in your fight freeze mechanism, and all these kind of things, and how that takes over your body, and it's all coming straight through that. Yeah,
it's a pathway. Used like you just said, it's a pathway from your mind to your also. When people say butterflies in your stomach, then vagus nerve.
Vagus nerve. You're gonna feel anxious. You're gonna feel
crazy. I'm talking about Las Vegas. When I'm talking. Yeah. We're talking about that's a different type of Las Vegas, right?
That's a bit Elvis, yeah. That is. It's I think when you study what goes on with your body, you are more in touch with it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that was in my life for most of it. I was always blissfully ignorant or unaware or out of touch with my own biology, my own physiology, my own brain, understanding why things are happening. I was into computing. So I was more worried about why my computer crashed and didn't reboot than I was about why I was crashing and not rebooting.
Right.
And I think that's where we go wrong. We're not teaching enough people around their physiological responses and how the biases are all again triggered.
Exactly. I agree with that. But I'm going to tell you something else that I talk about that's very important. If people would only know that from birth to 7, your brain is mapping things that you learn. There's mapping going on in the brain. After 7, that stops. So someone's IQ at 7 and 77 is the same. The only difference is you can map these things. Like I made my son play the guitar so he could learn at 5, so he could learn how to read music. Those things are mapped in your brain. If you do violent video games at 5, they're mapped in your brain. So what fast forward to that, you have to infuse arts and music and all of these awesome things in the brain from birth to 7. That's putting love in your brain. And then from there, after that, the world will be a better place for sure. But for us, our IQ, because you could learn, but you can't map your brain. You can't change the brain. You can learn things. We're always learners, right? We could always learn, but it's a totally different thing.
So that core foundation is laid down early. So you are kind of become a product of that time in your life.
Exactly. People don't, and that's why this book came out too, because it's about loving yourself, loving each other, and loving the planet. It's also a book that is healing your inner child. We all
sounds
have
like RuPaul. Is that RuPaul? If you can't love yourself or something?
Yeah, I don't even know. But for what my ideas are is that if you can't heal your inner child, you're never going to heal because you have to tap into those wounds. There's wounds that stay dormant, like you just said, and then they show up. So
yeah, I've got lots of strong memories about my childhood. The love I was shown by my mum and being part of a very nice family. It was very, very white, very middle class, very ordinary.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of stability as a child and I've never been in those situations where I had huge amounts of trauma. So I guess I can play on that now that I've got that really strong foundation.
Exactly. But when you have that foundation, then you could tap into it. If you don't have it, where are you going? Where are you going with it? If you don't have a foundation, those are the people that are lost. Those are the people that when people say, oh, mental health, well, you're not doing, you present, but are we following through on mental health in America? Don't give me a drug. It's not about, yes, medicine's important, but what are the side effects to medicine? Or what, there has to be more monitoring, right? You're going to give someone a drug and then you go, go ahead, bye-bye. Take that prescription drug and come see me in 6 months. In those 6 months, your brain chemistry changes.
Do we spend enough time with young parents or even before they have children, educating them in developing those formative years? Or are we just expecting people to figure it out?
You just said it. They're just expecting people to figure it out. What I'm presenting to you, I know because of my studies, but no one's talking about it. Who's talking? I mean, I don't know who's talking about this because I don't hear it. I hear myself. I'm talking to my own choir. That's why I hear podcasts are good, because now maybe someone will say, oh, Denise, that's something I never knew about. Well, thank you, Joanne, for bringing Denise here with your knowledge and power and helping us.
Because children, they're not, and I don't like generalizing, many children aren't developing resilience and they're suffering from anxiety, seeing a rise in ASD, autism, ADHD. People are trying to link that to drugs and vaccines. Maybe the link should be back to the environment and how they're being reinforced in that early formative years.
Exactly. They are not being, like you said, it is a parent thing, because you're not born a parent. But no, we don't get born and we're like, oh, I know how to be a parent. No one knows what, you know, but you have to be, you know, and if you were in a bad situation, what a life of having a bad family life, then that may perseverate. So it's a very heavy topic, but we need to do something, because it's a mental health crisis. And that's why the children, excuse me, I'm going to cough.
Or have a drink, go on, have a guzzle, don't worry. I press pause on the tape. Don't worry. Carry on. It's all, I'm joking. We're going to let it roll. We'll let it roll. No pressure. It's okay.
Well, you know, I have to protect my voice.
Of course. Yeah.
Of not even just children. I'm going to say the youth or the young adults of today have no coping mechanisms.
We're now coming into second generation. So we have parents who haven't had the coping mechanisms or the resilience built into their lives at their early age, are now becoming parents. So we're expecting them to now, and of course, the Chinese whispers, it's getting worse and worse and worse, more self-fulfilling. So we'll end up in maybe another couple of generations' time where we've lost that resilience that we've always had. And we want instant gratification. We want it now. We don't like not winning. We're going to live in debt and all these sort of things.
And, you know, I mean, sometimes I think to myself, how did I have the resilience? Because, yes, I had a relatively intact childhood. Then there were some episodes of things that did occur that were heavy. And then because you have to look within to know how to help others. How was I resilient? And I always just come back to, I learned this. Because at the time when, you know, we talked about the voice, we'll dial back to that. During that time, it was very dark. It was a dark time in my life. It was so dark. And people go through this, that's of the mental illness. What is darkness? How do you find? I always say you have to look for, I don't know, even if it's like a seed, you have to look for light. And what would happen to me, I had a six-year-old, remember? And I always thought it was the six-year-old that kept me alive. That's why I was still there. And as doing all this work that I've been doing for the past 5 years, I realized that as much as I loved him, it wasn't about my love for him that kept me here. It was my love for myself and the resilience and not wanting to give up and seeking things to get me to the next step. I would go to work every day I'd have to smile at myself in the mirror because of the heaviness that they would present on me, because they really didn't want me there. They didn't want to help someone with a disability. They didn't want to. But yet you're teaching people with disabilities, but you want to get rid of the educator with the disability. Go figure that out. But they didn't. You see, I'm here. They didn't get rid of me. I stayed. I persevered. I even was better than ever because my students. So me having a disability created me as the educator, but then me as the human with the disability that connected with them on a deeper, more loving level. Not that everybody has to get something to have that, but it was a better self-love purpose for me. So the bottom line with why I'm still here and sitting is I learned how to love myself. Because if you don't have self-love, you don't want to be here. Straight out, that was my formula. I could have said everything else like I did. I said, my son saved me. No, I saved myself.
I think that's the important thing, though, isn't it? It's, use the phrase bootstrap. It's being able to pull yourself up yourself and learn how to spot when you're starting to tumble a bit and how to put those checks in, and then exactly. Making sure you've got a supportive network around you that can also pick up on those triggers as well.
I think that was an awakening for me, because I used to say, oh, my son was six, I had to keep going. It was a little, I guess that was the motivation, but that's not what saved me. There's two different things, right? Because there's people who have everything. I think of people when they commit suicide, there's so many people that have everything. They have a child, and the people go, why did they do that? And I say to them, because sometimes I think I get very emotional about this, and I say, don't blame them. They were in so much pain, they couldn't stay here anymore. They weren't looking like me to find a crumb of light. You know, they just couldn't find it because they weren't doing things to serve their soul, and they weren't doing things to love themselves or healing. And that's why, but I do get very intense about them when people go, oh, why'd they do that? Why is they so people do say people are selfish when they do that. I'm like, just go read up, because it's not about that. Because if they have everything, why would they do that? And then taking these, and like, you know, I'm not against medicine, but checks and balances. If you're going to prescribe something, even to a younger adult, know some things create suicidal tendencies, right? That then if you better be monitoring them. Don't just leave them on their own to just be taking this drug and not know. So these are very important things that we're talking about that is not even addressed.
I use ChatGPT a lot these days because it's quite amazing, and
it's it is a helpful tool, right? But it's amazing. I don't use it that much, but I should try, right?
I use it to analyze my blood test results, other things that are going on.
That's interesting.
I cut and paste it off my healthcare app, all of my blood results, paste it and say, what do you reckon? And it goes, that's okay. Oh, be a bit careful. Your white blood count cells are a bit high. And should I be worried? Goes, no, because that's okay. So sometimes I have to go to your GP.
Wow, I'm gonna try that. Thank you. I like that idea.
No, I've got a couple of conditions that I'm sort of trying to sort out with a bit of medication and stuff. And I give it my symptoms and then I help it get to draft a letter to my GP. That makes it sound like I'm curious but knowledgeable.
You don't want
to sound like you're smart ass, do you? You want to sort of say,
exactly,
I was wondering if it's something like this because I've read something, you know. And it's
right, exactly. Just curious.
Not criticizing,
just curious.
Yeah. And would a course of antibiotics help with that? And they go, you're right. Thank you. That's good.
Yeah.
Or phrasing the condition in a way that is understandable. So you're sort of like, it's a bit of this and a bit of that. It asks you a few more questions. It says, okay, now construct a letter to my GP. And then I scan the leaflets you get in your medicine boxes. And I scan it in and say, look, I've been prescribed this. These are my other ones you know already take.
Right.
What indicators are there? Is it like to cause that?
No, this is a knowledge. Thank you. Because you know what? It can, you know, we need to be able, we have to be our advocates. So we need knowledge there.
Interesting. It's harder and harder to get access to your GP. They're busier.
Yeah.
They're more restrained. Yeah. Funding's less. Yeah. Certainly in the UK.
Yeah, it's true.
I've suffered from puffy ankles at times.
Yeah.
I've suffered from other conditions and I've just got sort of, is this causing that? You know, my blood pressure going up and down.
Yes, right. Because I have the blood pressure thing too. And you, like I just said to you, you want to take as little as possible because they have side effects.
Mm.
But some things you have to take. There's no way around it. If you have high blood pressure, would you want to be vital and alive? You cannot take the blood pressure meds, especially if there's a family history of heart conditions, right? Medicine's important, but knowledge is power and you have to be an advocate because they are human too. And they, you know, we have to work together. There's another thing, working together. Again, working together, people don't know, get that.
Yeah. If anyone listening to this right now, I'm not advocating that ChatGPT can replace a doctor.
Oh,
and
no.
The medical advice it gives you is at best a story. Yeah. And you have to interpret it yourself. So yeah, don't go off and
don't go doing that. But it doesn't hurt to investigate. This is investigating. This is not taking it for gospel or whatever word I want to use. It's not taking it for the, but just give you information. That's all. It's like listening to a podcast too. We're saying things, we have great information, but it's not for everybody too, right? Everybody's not for everybody. But I'm about fits everybody and being all in the moment.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. I think we do need to stop counting all the little micro steps and planning away the rest of your life. I know that my personality type is kind of now and next. What am I doing now? And what am I doing next? Next week, I don't care. I'm just worried about this evening, this afternoon, tomorrow morning. And I'm quite happy to wake up in the morning, check my diary and go, oh, that's interesting. That's what I'm doing today. Mm-hmm. As long as I shouldn't be somewhere else and I've got a train ticket and I know what time I'm supposed to leave. So that's kind of what I do. Yeah, before I go to bed, I'd say, what am I doing tomorrow? And mm-hmm. I go, oh, that sounds like a good day. I'm enjoying that.
Yeah.
Because I know some people who will plan out the rest of their life. It's like, I can't live with that. I can't be that planned. I just want to have the freedom to figure it out. Wing it.
When you plan, something else happens anyway. There's so many things that could change. You know, the being in the moment, like you said, like right now or the next. The people use that word mindfulness. They throw it around, right? Everybody's like, oh, mindfulness, you know. But it's not about, it's a practice. I think people really need to know, you're not just mindful. You have to practice mindfulness. You're not just you may be thoughtful, you may be thinking, but mindfulness is a practice.
Yeah, about yourself, about the impact on others,
and
others' impact on you, and then contextualizing and not sweating the small stuff, as they say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or if you're going to sweat it, take a moment and just breathe because don't sweat. Try not to sweat it out. Yeah. Try.
At that point there, you put your T-suit on and you go for a dip in the pool, don't you?
Put your T-suit on and go have fun. Exactly.
Yeah, have a splash.
Yeah.
And then you can wear it to the bar afterwards with a skimpy undies underneath.
I love that. Thank you. Yeah, it's true.
Denise, it's been absolutely fantastic having a chat with you. I mean, we've been rabbiting on now for well over an hour here and 20 minutes in the green room.
No
way. How can people get hold of you?
Is that true? Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. We can talk.
I can.
Now you got rid of your dysphonia. Yeah, yeah.
And then I'll go back for the injection again. You know, it's a cycle. And I'm blessed, though, because it works. So,
it works. So how can people get hold of you? What's the best way to track you down?
So I think the easiest way to get a hold of me is go to my website, denisecesare.com. Spell it with the Cesare, denisecesare.com. There you can purchase my book and you will get it autographed. If you choose to go through Amazon, which is fine because it comes in 2 seconds, you won't get it autographed. And you won't get the updated version. I made a new updated version because in my book, I have a glossary because when you hear words and sometimes you don't really understand what they're meaning in the context of what the author has presented to you. So it has a glossary of the, especially for children too, so they could hold on to the meaning of this book. Then there's a poem in there. So yeah, DeniseCaesar.com, Amazon, all social handles fits everybody on Instagram and Facebook. Of course, you could Google my name and you'll see everything I'm doing. You know, it's funny. Google could show you everything about yourself. And yeah, just reach out. So in my book, I empower the reader. I tell you how wonderful you are. But if you don't believe, that's my belief poem. If you don't believe it, it's not within you. So I'm going to say the poem before we leave. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, go for it. So you got your book, yes, Moments in Motion. Moments in Motion book is your Facebook page. And yes. T-Suit is t-suit.com if you want to find out more about the swimwear.
Yes, the swimwear. I'm sorry, I didn't talk about that. Yeah. See, if you go on Instagram, though, you know, there's the link tree. It can get you to the... People want quick, right? They don't want to go typing in my T-Suit, t-suit.com. Go to Instagram, go on my link tree. You'll see the website right there. Because they're quick. Poem. They want to be quick, right? So my Believe poem, and I want you to say it with me too. Believe.
Believe. Good old Ted Lasso, Believe.
I am loved.
I am loved.
I am light.
I am liked.
I am courage.
I am courage.
I am bright.
I am bright.
I am brave.
I am brave.
I am so important in this moment.
I am so important in this moment.
And you are.
And okay. You are. I have a mantra which I developed again about 10, 15 years ago, where I realized that in order to be loved, you have to be lovable. In order to be liked, you have to be likable. In order to be worthy of respect, you have to show that you were worthy of respect. And all of those things are within you to control. You cannot demand of somebody else if you're not prepared to give it. So 99% of what we have to do to be loved is within us.
Thank you.
Denise, it's been amazing. I've really loved our conversation. And yeah, please get in touch.
Thank you so much. Yes, please be in touch. And if you want to know anything, just contact me and we will be in touch. And thank you for having me on your podcast. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Take care. Bye. As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.